I find throughout the course of history that everything has a price. Almost everyone has a price. Politicians, now they're for sale at any price. The mafia, the president, kings, queens, average guy on the street will work for food, will work for beer. And of course, there's always the world's oldest profession, love for sale. Cole Porter said it so eloquently in his song. Cole Albert Porter, born June 9th, 1891, an American composer and songwriter. His works include the musical comedies Kiss Me, Kate, 50 Million Frenchmen, Du Barry Was a Lady, and Anything Goes, as well as songs like Night and Day, I Get a Kick Out of You, Well Did You Ever, and I've Got You Under My Skin. Porter was noted for his sophisticated, bawdy lyrics, clever rhymes, complex forms. One of the greatest contributors to the American songbook, Cole Porter, one of the few Tin Pan Alley composers to have written both lyrics and music for his songs. And an interesting side note, not just because he was born in Peru, Indiana, but he was a member of a wealthy Baptist family. Highly unusual, considering so many of the songwriters were of the names of Gershwin, etc., etc., truly non-Southern Baptist types. But our story tonight is not so much about Cole Porter as it is about an individual who probably brought, in 1956, one of the greatest degrees of recognition of the music of Cole Porter. One Ella Jane Fitzgerald, born in Newport News, Virginia, April 25th of 1917, later dubbed the First Lady of Song. Ella Fitzgerald was the most popular female jazz singer in the world for more than half a century. In her lifetime, she won 13 Grammy Awards, sold over 40 million albums. Her voice was flexible, wide-ranging, accurate, ageless. She could sing sultry ballads, sweet jazz, imitate every instrument in an orchestra. Oh, yes, my friends. Vocal cord, a voice, is an additional instrument in that orchestra, in a band. Ella worked with all the jazz greats from Duke Ellington, Count Basie, with whom I saw her with in Ravinia back in the 1970s, Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, Dizzy Gillespie, Benny Goodman. I guess it could be better said that the jazz greats had the pleasure of working with Ella. She performed at top venues all over the world, packed them to the hilt. Her audiences were as diverse as her vocal range. They were rich, poor, made up of all races, all religions, all nationalities. In fact, most of them had just one binding factor in common. They all loved Ella Fitzgerald. Welcome to our two-hour perspectives on the music of Ella Fitzgerald. I'm your host and commentator for this segment, Jeffrey Bennett. Please enjoy, won't you?
You're so close to me.
Dream, I've arrived.
You know, it's interesting when I say this program tonight is, for all practical purposes, called Perspectives on the Music of Ella. It really isn't. It's Perspectives on the Music of Cole Porter by Ella. In mid-1936, Ella made her first recording, Love and Kisses, was released under the Decca label with moderate success. By this time, she was performing with Chick Webb's band at the prestigious Harlem Savoy Ballroom, also referred to, always often referred to as the world's most famous ballroom. Shortly afterwards, Ella began singing a rendition of the song, If You Can't Sing It, You Have to Swing It. And during this time period, the era of big swing bands was shifting and the focus was turning more toward bebop. Ella played with the new style, often using her voice to take on the role of another horn in the band. You Have to Swing It was one of the first times she began experimenting with what we now know as scat singing. And her improvisation and vocalization thrilled the fans. Throughout her career, Ella would master scat singing, turning it into a form of art. No one, and I mean no one out there, has ever been able to duplicate Ella. Man, that gal could cook. 1938, at the age of 21, she recorded a playful version of an old nursery rhyme, A Tisket, A Tasket. Now, I remember that song from when I was a kid, but I don't remember the children's version. Oh, no, man, I remember Ella's version. Well, that album sold 1 million copies back in 1938. That was a lot. Hit number one, stayed on the pop charts for 17 weeks. Suddenly, Ella was famous. June 16, 1939, she mourned the loss of her mentor, Chick Webb. In his absence, the band was renamed Ella Fitzgerald and her famous band, and she took on the overwhelming task of band leader, somewhat unheard of for a woman to be in that position back then. And maybe, and perhaps in search of stability and protection, she married one Benny Cornegay, a local dock worker who had been pursuing her. Upon learning that Cornegay had a criminal history, she realized that the relationship was a mistake and had the marriage annulled. But while on tour sometime later with Dizzy Gillespie in 1946, she fell in love with a bassist, a cat by the name of Ray Brown. The two were married and eventually adopted a son who they named Ray Jr. At the time, Ray was working for producer and manager Norman Granz on the Jazz at the Philharmonic tour. Norman saw that Ella had what it took to be an international star, and he convinced her to sign with him. This wound up being the beginning of a lifelong business relationship and friendship, which will come around in a very interesting way here some years later, as we pick up our story a little bit later in this program about what this program is all about. Let's hear some more of Ella. Not just me. Anything goes, baby.
I know that I'm bound to answer when you propose. Anything goes, anything goes.
The song coming up was really made famous by Nat King Cole, but it's such an amazing, marvelous song. I want you to hear the whole thing without interruption. Miss Otis regrets.
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man who had led her so far astray. from under her velvet gown. She drew a gun and shot her lover down. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today.
Don't get any ideas, ladies. Under Norman Granz's management, Ella joined the Philharmonic Tour, worked with Louis Armstrong on several albums, three that I know of, and began producing her infamous songbook series, Granz did. From 1956 to 64, she recorded covers of other musicians' albums, including those by Cole Porter, who we're covering this evening, Duke Ellington, the Gershwins, Johnny Mercer, Irving Berlin, Rodgers and Hart. Well, the series proved to be quite popular, both with Ella's fans and the artists she covered. Ira Gershwin once remarked, "I never knew how good her songs were till I heard Ella Fitzgerald sing them." Well, in September of 1986, Ella underwent quintuple coronary bypass surgery. Doctors also replaced a valve in her heart, diagnosed her with diabetes, which they blamed for her failing eyesight. Press carried rumors that she would never be able to sing again, but Ella proved them wrong. Despite protests by family and friends, including Norman, Ella returned to the stage and pushed on with an exhaustive schedule. By the 1990s, Ella had recorded over 200 albums. 1991, she gave her final concert at New York's renowned Carnegie Hall, the 26th time she had performed there. On June 15, 1996, Ella passed away in her Beverly Hills home. We're going to get back to some more stories about Ella, but I want to get to the music, because frankly, pretty soon it'll be the still of the night. The music of Cole Porter, as sung by Ella Fitzgerald.
At the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. In the still of the night, while the world is in slumber, oh, the times without number, darling.
Interesting little side note to Ella and her career. Much as we've discussed with Dinah Washington and Sarah Vaughan, each of them in their own ways were wrapped up in civil rights-related issues. On the touring circuit, it was well known that Ella's manager felt very strongly about civil rights and required equal treatment for his musicians, regardless of their color. Norman refused to accept any type of discrimination at hotels and restaurants or concert halls, even when they traveled to the Deep South. Once they were in Dallas touring for the Philharmonic, a police squad, irritated by Norman's principles, barged backstage to hassle the performers. They came into Ella's dressing room where band members Dizzy Gillespie and Illinois Jacquette were shooting dice. They arrested everybody. "They took us down," Ella later recalled, "and when they got there, they had the nerve to ask for an autograph." Well, Norman wasn't the only one willing to stand up for Ella. She received support from numerous celebrity fans, including the very zealous Marilyn Monroe. I owe Marilyn Monroe a real debt, Ella said years later. It was because of her that I played the Macambo, a very popular nightclub in the 50s. She personally called the owner of the Macambo, Monroe did, and told him she wanted me, Ella, booked immediately, and that if he would do it, she would take a front table every night. She told him, and it was true, due to Marilyn's superstar status, that the press would go wild. Owner said yes, and Marilyn was there, front table every night. Well, the press went overboard, and after that, Ella never had to play a small jazz club again. Monroe was an unusual woman, a little ahead of her times, and I guess she didn't know it, Ella said. Marilyn Monroe, the champion of Ella Fitzgerald, but my God, who possibly wouldn't be? What an amazing voice. Unbelievably talented. Certainly my favorite. I think I was introduced to Ella in probably about the sixth grade. And it was initially, I think, the music, the Gershwin songbook that I was introduced her to. Went to a friend's house, Jimmy Starnes, one afternoon after school. And his dad was home and said, come on over here, guys. I want you to listen to some music I just got. And he played Ella. And it wasn't too much longer afterwards that I was babysitting for kids down the street and got introduced to Dave Brubeck. Man, I ain't never looked back. It's jazz, jazz vocals, jazz music. It's great stuff. For a lot of you, it's not your cup of tea. But you know what? I've received an awful lot of emails from you folks in the last couple of years as we've tried to do these series, thanking me for introducing you to a kind of music that maybe you never would have listened to before. Let's get on back to Ella Fitzgerald, the music of Cole Porter. I get a kick out of you.
Nothing to do, yet I get a kick out of you. I get a kick every time I see you standing there before me. I get a kick, though it's clear to me you obviously don't adore me. I get no kick in a plane flying too high with some guy in the sky is my idea of nothing to do. Yet I get a kick out of you. I get a kick out of you.
As I just mentioned, it's probable that more people were introduced to the songs of Cole Porter through this music we're playing tonight and these albums than in its original release in 1956 than through any other. In fact, when Ella Fitzgerald began recording these 16-odd songs with the Bregman Orchestra, Buddy Bregman, we'll talk about him a little later, in February of 1956, she was the first great singer to honor the finest American songwriters with such a collection. Both Ella and Cole Porter had many attributes in common: impeccable taste, elegant style, an unconscious sense of, or uncommon sense of propriety, and a quality that Porter himself described as special grace. Indeed, Ella's phrasing, diction, and warm swinging way with Porter are models of their kind. And yet there is a certain irony to these recordings we play tonight. Ella Fitzgerald sings the Cole Porter songbook, 1956 album by the American jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald, accompanied by a studio orchestra conducted and arranged by Buddy Bregman, focusing on the songs of Cole Porter, of course. This was Fitzgerald's first album from the newly created Verve Records. Time on the Verve label would see her produce her most highly acclaimed recordings at the peak of her vocal powers. These albums we play for you tonight inaugurated Fitzgerald's songbook series, each of the 8 albums in the series focusing on a different composer of the canon known as the Great American Songbook. Her manager and the producer of many of her albums, Norman Granz, visited Cole Porter at the Waldorf Astoria after the album was recorded, played him the entire album. And after it was over, Cole Porter merely remarked, "My, what marvelous diction that girl has." Texture of Fitzgerald's voice, a thrillingly clear, slightly smoky alto that dipped alluringly into a bottom register and soared with full ringing high notes into an upper soprano range, could only be fully appreciated in modern high fidelity. That voice is arguably the most perfect all-around pop jazz vocal instrument of the past 50, 60 odd years. Inaugurating the series, of course, are these albums the most famous. As pop sensibilities go, Fitzgerald and Porter were, well, as we mentioned, a most unlikely match. In overlooking Porter's wit and irony, Fitzgerald enshrined his romanticism and focused attention on his melodic brilliance, which he accentuated with jazz phrasing and ornamentation. The importance of this songbook and all of her songbook albums has deepened over time. These recordings were instrumental in perpetuating the ideas of American popular song as a classic form. Buddy Bergman's Cole Porter songbook and Rodgers and Hart songbook, double albums with Ella Fitzgerald, both which he arranged and conducted, have been elected as two of the top 25 albums of all time in almost every magazine poll and record guidebook. This particular album, this two-part album we're playing tonight, Ella Fitzgerald and the Songs of Cole Porter, was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 2000, which is a special Grammy award established in 1973 to honor recordings that are at least a quarter century old and that have what they refer to as qualitative or historical significance. In 2003, it was one of 50 recordings chosen by the Library of Congress to be added to the National Recording Registry. Ella Fitzgerald, the Cole Porter Songbook. Enjoy.
From Ohio, Mr. Thorne calls me up from night till morn. Mr. Thorne wants cornered corn, and that ain't hay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. From Milwaukee, Mr. Fritz often dines me at the Ritz. Mr. Fritz invented Schlitz, and Schlitz must pay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. Mr. Harris, plutocrat, wants to give my cheek a pat. If the Harris pat means a Paris hat, baby. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, baby. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Birds do it. Bees do it. Even educated fleas do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it. Lithuanians, and let's do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. The Dutch in old Amsterdam do it. Not to mention the Finns, folks in Siam do it. Think of Siamese twins, some Argentines without means do it. People say in Boston even beans do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay, do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Cold Cape Cod clams against their wish, do it. Even lazy jellyfish, do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Electric eels, I might add, do it. Though it shocks him, I know. Why ask if Shad do it? Way to bring me Shad and Roe in shallow shows. English souls do it. Goldfish in the privacy of bowls do it. Let's do it. Let's fall in love.
Ella Fitzgerald with Cole Porter's Let's Do It. Let's Fall in Love. You know, I realize that this music, in the scheme of things and in the timing we live in, is out of place. It's antiquated, but I guess then so am I. And I don't mind. I enjoy listening to music that you can understand the words, you can dance to, vertically or otherwise. Thanks for joining us today on this special Perspectives on America. We're highlighting the music of Cold War, Cole Porter, as performed by Ella Fitzgerald in her absolutely chart-stopping, phenomenally well-received two-album series, Ella Fitzgerald, The Cole Porter Songbook. Ella's brilliant performance of, well, 32 Cole Porter songs. It is amazing. There was a certain irony to this recording done in 56. It saw the eagerly awaited premiere of My Fair Lady, starring Julie Andrews, on Broadway. Harold Arlen was still waiting for the theater, as were Irving Berlin and Rodgers and Hammerstein. They were writing for the theater at that time. The opening of a Broadway show could still give audiences the kind of intense excitement that once heralded a new Verdi or Puccini opera in Italy. But it was an era that had reached its zenith, for, with few notable exceptions, the great age of both the Broadway and Hollywood musical was over. Neither Ella Fitzgerald nor producer Norman Granz had any way of knowing that Cole Porter had written his last show for Broadway when they recorded the first volume of Ella Fitzgerald Sings the Cole Porter Songbook. Porter was born in, well, it's not Peru, it's Peru, Indiana, on June 9, 1891. Received his formal education at Yale College, Harvard University in Law and Music, and the Schola Cantorum in Paris. He began his extensive musical education under his mother's tutelage with the study of piano and violin. His instinct for lyric writing was cultivated by his father's avid interest in classic languages and 19th-century romantic poetry. Now, while at Yale, Porter wrote the football songs Bulldog and Bingo Eli Yale, still sung at games to this day. Well, at least they were in 1956. Whether they still are or not, I have no clue. I don't follow football closely enough. But his first musical comedy scores were written for his fraternity and the Yale Dramatic Association, put on vaudeville displays during Yale Glee Club concerts that could have taken place on professional circuits. His early achievements seemed an almost certain passport to an equally prompt success in the commercial theater, but his Broadway debut in March 1916 as a composer and co-lyricist of a comic opera called See America First was an absolute unmitigated disaster. In the summer of 1917, Porter sailed for Europe, and after several months of war relief work, he enlisted in the French Foreign Legion. Later in the war, he became attached to the American Embassy in Paris, where he met and married a beautiful divorcee named Linda Lee Thomas. For most of the next decade, the Porters made Europe, especially Paris and Venice, their home. They traveled extensively, lived on a grand scale, intimate with leading cultural figures, as well as the cream of international café society. Surrounded by parties and festivities, Porter nevertheless continued to hone his craft, writing an occasional review score and the Greenwich Village Follies of 1924, from which his songs were instantly ejected, and interpolating some songs in various Broadway and London productions. But by large, Porter in the mid-20s was an unhappy composer, and active, lavish social life in the playgrounds of Europe failed to cure his despondency or pull him out of what he described as a black mood of despair, although he continued to write songs for his own and his friends' amusement. To his amazement, I'm in Love Again, a song which had been deleted from the Greenwich Village Follies of 1924, began to be played by many band leaders. A Paul Whiteman recording in 1927 made it a hit. But the real turning point in Porter's career came about through the services of Irving Berlin, Porter's closest friend among songwriters and the songwriter Porter himself admired most. Berlin told producer E. Ray Goetz, G-O-E-T-Z, that Porter was the ideal composer of songs with the proper French flavor for a new show Goetz was preparing. The producer tracked down Porter on Venice's Lido and pleaded with him to write the songs for the new show. Goetz later said that Porter was tough to convince, that he had been burned by Broadway many times before, but Porter claimed that he was so happy to have the assignment that he fell on him like an overeager puppy. The result was Paris, a play with music that opened in the fall of 1928 at Irving Berlin's Music Box Theater. As they say, the rest is history. A duet added while the show was touring, Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love, the piece we just finished playing for you. A jaunty, witty plea for naturalness in amatory matters became a sort of anthem of liberation in the closing years of the Roaring Twenties. The song was incorporated into the score Porter wrote for Charles B. Cochran's 1929 London Review Wake Up and Dream, which also boasted the throbbing ballad What Is This Thing Called Love? A song with an unusual harmonic progression for its time, had a rhythmic pattern apparently based on a native chant that Porter had heard at a square in Marrakesh. Once again, we return to the lilting, unbelievable, haunting voice of the great Ella Fitzgerald talking to us about, well, just one of those things.
As Dorothy Parker once said to her boyfriend, fare thee well. As Columbus announced when he knew he was bound, it was swell, Isabel, swell. As
Abelard said to Eloise, don't forget to drop a line to me, please. As Juliet cried in a Romeo's ear, Romeo, why not face the fact, my dear? It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy flings, one of those bells that now and then ring, just one of those things. It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous flights, a trip to the moon on gossamer wings, just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been aware that our love was just one of those things. If we thought a bit of the end of it when we started painting the town, we'd have been to minor every time we say goodbye.
You get a distinct feeling for Ella Fitzgerald's ability to handle this marvelous music of Cole Porter. Over half the songs on this dual album were written after a horrendous horseback riding accident that Cole Porter had in 1937. It was a crippling accident that required over 30 bone operations to prevent amputations of his legs and kept him in constant pain the rest of his life. Porter battled back, maintaining his impressive output of show and film scores. No evidence suggested that his creativity dried up after the accident. As we mentioned, roughly half the songs we're doing on this two-album program tonight were written after the accident, ample evidence of Porter's continuing strength and versatility as a creator. Very much involved with people like Ethel Merman, Gene Kelly, Bob Hope to some degree, so many others that he was involved with his Hollywood and Broadway writing skills, the people that started in Broadway wound up in Hollywood and vice versa. Amazing stuff to listen to. If you've joined us late this evening, we are devoting this entire two-hour set on this Friday evening perspectives on the music of Cole Porter as sung by Ella Fitzgerald, who to me was one of the most amazing singers I've ever been privileged to see live in person. Back in the 1970s with my wife and a very dear family friend who'd actually had grown up with my mother back in the 1930s and 40s. And we would go sit out at Ravinia, which is this marvelous festival outside of Chicago, out near Highland Park, Illinois, up where my buddy Gus lived, and my great-grandmother, Gardner, lived. And we'd go sit up on the lawn with Kentucky Fried Chicken and a couple of bottles of wine or whatever we decided to imbibe in. And was privileged to watch Ella Fitzgerald work her wondrous magic with the marvelous Count Basie and his orchestra. So we have been blessed to see two phenomenal talents in that respect, along with many others. Once again, Ella Fitzgerald, Too Darn Hot, the music of Cole Porter.
Is not, 'cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot. It's too, too darn hot. Baby tonight, and pitch the woo with my baby tonight. I like to coo with my baby tonight, and pitch the woo with my baby tonight. But brother, you fight my baby tonight, 'cause it's too darn hot. According to the Kinsey Report, every average man you know much prefers his lovey-dovey to court when the temperature is low. But when the thermometer goes way up and the weather is sizzling hot, Mr. Gob for his squad, a Marine for his queen, a GI for his cutie pie is not. 'Cause it's too, too, too darn hot. It's too darn hot.
Why do we bring you these musical anthologies? For many of us who are getting upwards in years, it takes us back to a time period where the words meant something in music. You could understand them, number one. Sometimes they were lyrical to the point of being somewhat hilarious, sometimes very serious. You know, the piece coming up called Every Time, let's see, what do we got here? All of You. Piece that Sinatra did exceptionally well with some years later. Maybe it was earlier. I don't know. Sinatra's another cat that did a lot of Cole Porter. Cole Porter did marvelous music. Don't kid me wrong. Nothing against the music of Rodgers and Hart or Rodgers and Hammerstein or the Gershwin Brothers or anything else. I've always had this affinity for the marvelous music of Cole Porter, and privileged to bring it to you tonight. And it's something different. You get a little bit of the upbeat, a little bit of the downbeat, and all of which came from Cole Porter. You know, there was a period of time in Porter's life where his critics and his friends continued to chide him for not coming out with pieces of music that were what they referred to as up to his standards. And yet, even after all that kind of stuff being said, he's doing pieces like Night and Day, which was used for the title of a 1946 movie with Cary Grant, which depicted a somewhat whitewashed version of Porter's life story. Did a lot of work with Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. As a matter of fact, there's a marvelous album out called The Cole Porter Songbook, which was done in the late 1950s with Fred Astaire with a jazz trio. I became familiar with it the other day, and I'm looking forward to seeing if I can acquire a copy of it to add to my collection. But you start looking at some of the later work that Cole Porter did, and did, of course, all the songs that were featured in films like Silk Stockings and High Society with Sinatra and Grace Kelly, the exquisite Grace Kelly, and Bing Crosby and others. His final piece of work was for a television production called Aladdin. Last piece of work he ever did. Died in California, October of 1964, at the age of 73, after they'd amputated his leg. Didn't happen immediately, but once they did, it was pretty much the end. Cole Porter touched many people's hearts with his blend of glorious music, sophisticated lyrics, and as the revival, the Porter revival, continued through the late 50s, the 60s, even into the 70s, his music continues to blossom, and more people discover the beauty, the elegance, the wit that were the hallmarks of his very best work. And it should never be forgotten that Ella Fitzgerald was celebrating the art of Cole Porter when many were still taking Porter for granted. Enjoy it. Begin the Begin.
When they begin the Begin, to live it again is past all endeavor. Except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are, swearing to love forever, and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin. When they begin the Begin, oh yes, let them begin the Begin, make them play, till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. We suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the Begin.
Coming up during the second hour of this evening's Perspectives on the Music of Cole Porter, as sung by Ella Fitzgerald, I guess, we're going to be sharing with you some marvelous thoughts and remembrances from Buddy Bregman, who was in effect the producer of what you're listening to tonight, this marvelous two-album set. And as I mentioned before, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but we were have had such wide positive feedback on our programs with Dinah Washington and Sarah Vaughan. There's no way I could not do a program of Sarah Vaughan. Recently, we completed a one-hour program, I believe it was, on Billie Holiday, which I thoroughly enjoyed doing. There is more Ella to come in the future. Some marvelous work she did with so many other great artists. Work with Louis Armstrong. The three albums were done, including a marvelous rendering of Porgy and Bess by Ella and Satchmo. Some marvelous work she did with Duke Ellington. They had a marvelous series of things they did together, some live performances. And I could bring you Ella Fitzgerald for the next 6 months, and I'd be one happy camper, but we'll mix and match it up. Thanks for joining us. We're going to let this balance of this hour run out with some more marvelous music from Ella Fitzgerald. And once again, coming up at the next hour, we're going to share some marvelous stories about the production of this album and some of the people that were involved and when and where it was produced, and a marvelous cast of characters, as it were, that were involved in Ella Fitzgerald's Cole Porter songbook from Verve Records back in 1956.
And when you are near, close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that, darling, it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Just disappear. I care for you much too much, and when you are near, close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet. Darling, it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Yet resurrected and sailing the crest. Why this elation mixed with deflation? What explanation? I am in love. Such conflicting questions rise around in my brain. Should I order cyanide or order champagne? Oh, what is this sudden jolt? I feel like a fright.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, in trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is really is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You know that nothing beats a storable food stockpile for readiness, but there are two problems with storable food. It's expensive, and eventually, it runs out. Then what? What happens to you or your family when there's not enough food to go around? In a true survival scenario, you need a renewable food source. That's why Seed Armory has developed a survival-grade seed vault that can produce over $25,000 worth of crops from just one kit. Unlike other seed vaults, we don't inflate our seed counts with fillers. All our seeds are 100% heirloom and non-GMO. Not a green thumb? Don't worry. We've written an easy-to-follow guide to guarantee your success from planting to harvest. For a limited time, we're offering an additional 10% off your order when you enter the code RBN at checkout. Go to seedarmory.com. That's seedarmory.com. Don't wait. Like everything else, seeds are in short supply.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.